Delayland.
Okay, it's a sunny morning. I can see the sun from over here, but I do have a mission that I'm kind of fearful of, because the last time I did it, I remember it to be a bureaucratic nightmare.
This is Nicholas, trying to do something everyone in Germany has to do when they move house: register the new address with the city authorities. And that can be a nightmare, I know, because I've recently moved myself. So I feel for Nico, I truly do.
Oh no. Oh no. I thought this would be finally easy. So, another day, another chance.
Anliegens kann die Aufnahme ihrer persönlichen Daten erforderlich sein.
So, I'm on my way to the city hall. I have all the necessary paper, which is one, the confirmation of my landlord that I moved flats. And now let's see how smooth the whole thing goes.
It would be so simple to do it all digitally. But no, not in Germany. This episode of Delayland is about digitalization in Germany, or the lack of it.
Hey Andreas, how are you?
I think it didn't work before, so can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, more or less.
I'm Nicholas. And I'm Andreas. And this is Delayland. Germany and the missing magic. Brought to you by DW. Episode 4, What the Facts.
Wow, the internet connection in the train was just awful. I could barely hear you.
Bad internet, bad mobile connectivity. Who would expect that you would get a good signal in one of Germany's most densely populated areas?
It's depressing.
But to lighten your mood, here's a funny and telling story about the state of digital affairs in Germany.
Let's go for it.
In Germany, health insurance is mandatory, right? We all have an ID card for the doctor, and it's like a Medicare card in the US or in Australia.
You present the card at the doctor's and the doctor bills your insurance company, right?
But if you forget your card, the doctor has no proof you're insured.
Happens, my doctor just tells me to bring it next time.
Yeah, mine does too. But some health insurance companies have apps that can confirm your insurance status there and then.
Great, digital proof, no plastic.
Sort of. The app sends a fax.
A fax?
Yeah, some doctors in Germany still insist on faxes. They won't accept PDFs or QR codes as proof of identity or your health insurance.
Wow, smartphone apps that send faxes, nice. But somehow fitting, Germany still loves its paper and rubber stamps, doesn't it? That's one of the reasons we still go to the city hall in person to register a new address.
You're still traumatized, aren't you?
A bit, yeah.
The thing about fax machines, though, is this. They have become a symbol of stagnation in Germany. A young political party made a point of it in their campaign for an election in 2025 with the slogan "Keine Zeit für Faxen," no time for faxes. But as we all know, Faxen in German also means
fooling around. Yeah, so we called this episode What the Fax.
Well, what about the fax? Here are some facts first. Bitkom, an industry association for the German IT and telecommunications sector, surveyed more than 500 companies and found that fax machines were still very much in use.
I thought the fax was dead, but like zombies, they are alive.
I'm afraid so. Here's Bitkom's Felix Lessner.
Around three quarters, like 77% of German companies still use fax machines, and 25% use it often or very often. Most of the companies, they state that it is essential for communication with the public authorities. So maybe this is where the problem lies.
So the problem lies with public authorities. Are you ready to tell us about your experience at City Hall?
Yeah. So we've mentioned that residents in Germany are required by law to register their address with the city or the town administration. In theory, it's very simple.
Yeah, you tell them, here's my old address, here's my new one. They put a sticker on your ID with a new address and you're good to go.
Exactly. And to be fair, you can do it online, but for that you need a digital ID, which I didn't have. And about 2/3 of the population doesn't have it.
I don't have one either.
I could have one set up last time I renewed my passport. I got a leaflet about it, but nobody explained me what it was for, so I didn't bother. There was no national awareness campaign or anything like it to inform people or get them inspired about digitalization.
Right.
And I've never needed one, not once, until I just moved and needed to register my new address. So to do that, I was told to go to the city hall in person, but I had to make an appointment first. I called the city hall and the earliest appointment was in 3 weeks, although legally you're supposed to register your address within 2 weeks of moving. They told me about a last-minute appointment. You can only get it if you call very early in the morning. I got lucky, and after waiting a little, it all went smoothly. I registered my new address, and I also got access to my digital ID.
Yay! Congrats!
Yeah, thanks. But I still had to go there in person to get my address sticker. The place looked pretty modern, but it all felt so last century.
You're not alone in feeling that.
There is a resistance against digitalization and against improving the little things.
That's Dilay Karayel. She's a PhD student with the University of Düsseldorf doing cancer research. Dilay is from Turkey and says she likes Germany a lot. But she also says she's often frustrated by an apparent fixation on rules and bureaucratic procedures here. It simply drives her up the wall, like when she needs permission for something at work.
I have to ask someone, and she has to ask someone, and that person has to ask someone, and this takes months.
Dilay told us she has great respect for the German love of rules and regulations, but that she also feels the rules sometimes lead to a lack of flexibility and that that is holding the country back.
Germany has made it so far such a great country with the rules, and we have to follow the rules, but sticking too much to the rules, I think, make it very difficult to adapt because the world is changing.
But it's not just rules, is it? It's also people wanting to do things the way we've always done them.
Could be. Either way, the country as a whole feels stuck in its ways. The same as we found in the car industry.
Do you remember what Manuel Vermeer said in episode 2 about Germany and its failing car industry?
How could I forget?
I think it has a lot to do with arrogance and not being able to admit that we also might be the ones who can learn from other cultures.
Well, we do have some positive examples of digitalization in this episode. But first, let's dig deeper to get closer to the problem.
The European Union publishes rankings of digital development among member states.
And Germany is average at best.
But when it comes to digital public services, the country lags way behind. It ranks 24th out of 27 EU countries.
Bottom of the class for a country that still lives off a reputation for being a top innovator?
Well, it used to be true. German engineers invented the world's first programmable computer.
The SIM card.
MP3 audio conversion, which basically made the iPod possible.
And SAP, the largest non-American software company, is German.
And yet Germany can't make digitalization work for its own public services?
Seems that way. E-government is basically non-existent in Germany.
E-government can involve any interactions you have with a public administration, national, regional, or local. A typical example is when you need a document, like a new passport.
Or license plates for your car.
Or you need to register after moving.
You get over it. Or you want to get married.
Or divorced. The question is, can you access these services with a computer in Germany? Just like shopping online or streaming a movie.
Or do you have to go through a lengthy process, make an appointment, show up in person, bring papers and the right number of copies, fill out forms, go home and wait, often weeks, for another document to be sent by post?
Or worse, being told you have to pick it up in person.
There are around 580 different public services in the city. Yeah, and we have around 120 which are already online.
That's Frank Reinhardt, head of Düsseldorf's digital agency.
As Frank told us, around 120 public services are online. That includes registering a new address or getting a parking permit.
But 120 services out of 580, that's only a bit more than 20%.
Which means 80% of public services in the city are analog and offline. But by German standards, Düsseldorf is doing quite well. It ranks 6th overall on Bitkom's Smart City Index, which includes 83 German cities.
The German capital Berlin has only made it into the top 40, and Frankfurt, the financial capital, the top 30. Munich, Oktoberfest Central, is in first place overall.
But Frank has a vision for Düsseldorf, a website where residents will be able to access every public service.
You log in, you can see the building text there. If you are the owner, you see the kindergarten place for your kids and then the parking permit for your car. Yeah, so that's basically the vision.
So what's stopping the vision becoming reality?
I think in Germany we don't have an issue with our strategy. We have an issue with getting things done.
Frank Reinhardt at Düsseldorf's digital agency points to another aspect that slows things down in Germany: the way the country is organized politically. In other words, the federal setup. In Nazi Germany, all power was concentrated in one place and effectively one person. In Berlin, with Adolf Hitler.
Since the war, Germany has been a federal republic again. On the national level, you have a federal government and the parliament, which makes laws for the whole country.
Then, since reunification, we've had 16 federal states, each with their own governments and parliaments, responsible for laws in each respective state.
And the states are represented in the national parliament in Berlin, too.
And then, you also have local authorities in cities, towns and villages. It's on this local level that citizens tend to access most day-to-day public services.
But the local authorities don't get much help from the higher-ups, according to Frank Reinhardt. And that is a problem in the federal system, at least for digitalization.
We don't have so much processes or software coming from the federal level. Yeah? So that means each city basically has to find its own solution for a process which is nationwide. For example, car registration.
In 2017, Berlin passed a law requiring administrations on both federal and state levels to improve their digital performance.
The idea was to bring 575 public services online. But the deadline is over, and I guess we have 20 services online. And online in that context means I have an online formula.
That's Stefanie Köhl of the Stein-Hardenberg Institute in Berlin, which researches on the modernization of government. Stefanie Köhl and her colleagues have studied why so many efforts over the past 25 years have failed to make public administration in Germany more digital.
25 years ago, we did not have smartphones yet. Social media was but a twinkle in our eyes. We were file sharing, not streaming, and we still went to the shops.
And yet, there were people somewhere in German administration who were actually thinking ahead about bringing public services online. Only nothing happened. At least not much.
And the question remains, why?
We call it institutional inflation.
Institutional inflation is when a public body gets bloated. There are too many people trying to reinvent the wheel without talking to each other and without learning from each other's mistakes.
Everybody does something, but only in his or her silo. So there's no connection between solutions, sometimes also no compatibility between technologies, so you can't bring them together.
It's exactly what we discovered had delayed the Cologne Opera House project in episode 3.
Yeah, too many people working on the same project but not talking to each other. An inability to communicate openly. That's exactly what happened in Cologne.
So if it's not unique to one area of life in Germany, it's got to be a deeper problem, structural or cultural.
Probably. But enough of this negativity for the moment. Let's have a look at how they do digitalization in Denmark, a country where Düsseldorf's vision for a website for all public services is reality.
We will get there after these short messages.
You should tell the people who we are and what our new show is.
I'm Robert Smith, and this is Jacob Goldstein, and we used to host a show called Planet Money.
And now we're back making this new podcast about the best ideas and people and businesses in history.
And some of the worst people, horrible ideas, and destructive companies in the history of business. We struggled to come up with a name, decided to call it Business History.
You know why?
Why?
Because it's a show about the history of business. Available everywhere you get your podcast.
What are the consequences of getting on Europe's bad side?
The rationale is more like, f*** those guys.
How is stealth wealth changing retail?
You can have taste and still buy dupes.
What does a $6.2 million banana have to do with any of us?
People don't like the attribution of serious financial value to comedy.
Join me, Felix Salmon, and my co-hosts Emily Peck and Elizabeth Spires as we talk about the most important and obscure stories in business and finance. Follow Slate Money wherever you like to listen.
Now back to Delayland.
Let's have a look at how they do digitalization in Denmark. A country where Düsseldorf's vision for a website for all public services is reality.
Denmark has become a role model for digitalization and e-government in Europe.
Hi. Hi. I'm Jacob.
Andreas.
Hi, Andreas. Hi, nice to meet you.
My name is Jacob Fryer. I'm the CEO here at Digital Hub Denmark.
Delegations from all over Europe and around the world come to Copenhagen to learn how the Danes do digital. Listening to Jacob, it sounds so simple.
Border.dk, Citizen.dk, it's a one-stop shop where all citizens in Denmark have access to more than 2,000 public services on a digital platform.
Danes hardly ever have to visit an administrative office anymore.
All they need is a digital identification called MitID, Danish for My ID or EID.
Like the EID in Germany.
Which neither of us have.
Yeah.
Okay, then I take my code here, my ID, and then it checks my face, and then I do this.
Jasper Steenwinkel, who works at the Agency for Digital Government, shows us how it works. First, there is a digital mailbox for all his correspondence with public services.
I'm a public employee, that's my paycheck, yeah. But I can see everything else here. I can see something from physiotherapy, because I broke my shoulder in a ski accident. And then there's somebody that has evaluated the value of my house, the tax.
Yeah.
Just to give you an example.
There's only one thing Jasper can't do without turning up in person.
I cannot marry on this, but I can get a divorce.
The key, as we've said, is his digital identification, My ID or EID. Adam Lebeck, the Deputy General of Denmark's Agency for Digital Government, told us almost everyone in Denmark has one.
About 97% of the adult population in Denmark have EID, and 83%, I think, use it at least once a week. They use it all the time.
But the difference to Germany is EID in Denmark is mandatory.
The same goes for the digital mailbox. It's mandatory.
Danes can opt out, but only for specific reasons, and only a small group do opt out.
Danes can also use their EID as verification for online banking and other business applications.
Underpinning Denmark's EID is a unique central person register number assigned to every individual. The Danes introduced the CPR way back in 1968.
and everything that has followed, the EID, the digital mailbox, and BorgerDK, the public services portal, everything is based on the central person register.
Since you use the same identifier for all systems, it makes data sharing easier. That means you can create seamless services across several authorities. You have to trust the government, of course.
In European rankings that measure citizens' trust in government, Denmark regularly takes the top spot.
We in Denmark trust a single point of entry, MitID. I don't think that that could happen in Germany.
Well, Denmark doesn't have our history, including two dictatorships that relied heavily on collecting personal data to spy on and control people's lives. First, the Nazi regime from 1933 to 45, and after World War II, the one-party rule in communist East Germany and its secret police, the Stasi.
Ein Grundpfeiler der Stabilität und der Sicherheit.
Because of this history, Germans have tended to be against the idea of a single identification number.
Instead, we've got different identification numbers for different purposes. One number for taxes, one for social security, one for health insurance, retirement benefits, driver's license, passports.
That situation is changing, however. Slowly, in 2021, during the COVID pandemic, the German parliament passed a law that allows the use of one ID per person across all of the country's public administration.
It's just 50 years later than Denmark.
Digital services are still optional, though, not mandatory.
The question is the slow pace a feature of German life or is it a bug in the system?
It could be a feature, part of our culture. Many Germans simply don't want everything to be digital.
And we felt that skepticism too, especially after we visited the Agency for Digital Government in Copenhagen.
And especially after they told us they want to use artificial intelligence.
All right there, here we are on the street of Copenhagen. So Nico, they said they want to introduce some AI so that if you log onto the system knows everything about you and would suggest what is the next thing you should do.
Maybe one day this whole paper that we're still handling in German public administration could be something positive.
If one day we are all enslaved by AI, you know, and only Germany is like the happy country where it doesn't work because the data is not even there in digital form. It's still on some document in some kind of administration's basement. Then maybe.
Then the strength of this system comes into play, yes.
Okay.
But you can really see the effects of digitalization in Denmark. It's not just some black box technology in the background. It has transformed society and cities.
True. Since official correspondence is now digital, they've removed all public mailboxes in the cities. And when we were in Denmark, I didn't see a single person pay with cash. Jacob said Denmark was almost entirely cashless.
I don't even have a wallet. I don't think I've paid for anything in cash in 2026.
2026?
Five. It's all about the future, man.
It's almost the exact opposite in Germany. Jacob would run into problems here.
Yeah, like in cafes and bakeries that insists you pay cash.
My name is Marnie. I'm the owner of a vegan restaurant, cafe, bar, living room in Düsseldorf.
Marnie has put the cash-only note on the front door of her cafe, and she tells new customers before they order it's cash-only to avoid disappointments later.
Cash-only. Cash-only, of course. I'm old-fashioned. I believe money in my hand is money. If I have no control about it, and it's on a card, going to the bank, etc., etc., I don't know. It's weird.
Marnie told us bank fees for digital and card payments are too high.
But there are also security issues.
Yes, power outages, cyber attacks.
But are those fears real or a bad case of German angst?
Probably a bit of everything. And we've shown in other episodes of Delayland that there is a general skepticism about change here.
Let's say Germany would want to catch up with Denmark. Would that even be possible? I mean, Denmark laid the foundation for their digital transformation more than 50 years ago.
And based on what we saw in the Cologne Opera, the rail network, the car industry, we are not sure Germany even knows how to move that fast.
So we thought we'd visit a country that's living proof of how quick you can change. India. In India, many people view digitalization positively as an opportunity and a path to a better future.
If you've been following Delayland, you'll know we've looked to India for inspiration before in the episode about the car industry. We visited the southern states of Tamil Nadu and Karnataka.
We saw lots of street vendors selling fruits, snacks and juice.
Some sellers used bikes or scooters or had oxen to pull their carts. This vendor pushed her cart herself.
But what really blew our minds was this. Even street vendors in India accept digital payments.
Next to a heap of coconuts, there's a QR code. Customers scan it, enter the amount, and the transaction is done.
India did for digitalization what Denmark did, just much faster and on a much bigger scale.
Digital India is a journey that was started about 15 years ago. And given the size and diversity of our country, digital is probably the only way to progress.
But how? India is vast and has many remote regions. It's also a federal democracy, like Germany and Denmark.
We visited Bengaluru, formerly Bangalore. The city is often called the Silicon Valley of India because it's home to the biggest IT companies, both Indian and foreign.
It's the capital and largest city of the southern state of Karnataka. With about 8 million inhabitants, the city alone has more people than the whole country of Denmark. The whole of India has a population of about 1.4 billion people. That's 1,400 million, if that's easier to imagine.
It's not.
Then let's put it like this. You need more than 200 Denmarks to match the population of India, or 17 Germanys.
In case you're wondering why we're so obsessed with these size comparisons, here's why.
Remember the foundation of Denmark's digital development, the unique identification number called CPR?
India introduced a similar number in 2009 and called it Aadhaar.
Now, bear in mind India's population and that many people live in remote villages.
Well, despite that, India pulled it off. Today, 99.9% of Indians have a personal number.
After Aadhaar, India added a digital payment system called UPI, or Unified Payment Interface, making it possible for street vendors to take digital payments, for example.
But it's bigger than that. Together, Aadhaar and UPI are the basic infrastructure, the technical foundation for India's warp speed digital journey.
We are on the way now to one of the biggest IT companies in India.
TCS.
Which stands for Tata Consultancy Services. It's part of this huge conglomerate, Tata, that does everything from steel to what? Toothpaste? I don't know.
Exactly. And I'm super excited if we get a hint how they could do it that fast. And if there's something we can take back home to Germany, something that could tell us how we can digitalize a little bit faster.
The TCS offices are located in an international tech campus.
The vibe is a mix of business district and research hub.
So let's go.
It's where we meet Rahul. He's one of the many young IT professionals who spend their lunch break in a park that's surrounded by high-rise buildings made of steel and glass.
Rahul tells us that he works as an animator for a big computer game company and that he loves beatboxing.
Check.
Wow. Inside the TCS offices, the vibe is less groovy.
We didn't dare ask the man we came to meet whether he could beatbox. He's a senior vice president.
My name is Tejpal Bhatla. I look after all the government business for TCS, which is public services in India.
Worldwide, TCS has around 600,000 employees. That's about the same number of people who live in Denmark's capital, Copenhagen.
TCS was involved in setting up ADAR and the digital payment system UPI. Other IT companies were involved as well. Because from the beginning, the goal was bigger than just digital public services.
Both Aadhaar and UPI, they were the foundational systems funded by government, but a lot of participation from public sector.
The Aadhaar ID and the payment interface UPI were designed as open platforms, which means other providers can use it as well.
Like railroads and highways that can be used by anyone. In short, like public infrastructure. Aadhaar ID and UPI are the digital infrastructure upon which other services can be built.
When you build railroads or highways or ports, for example, right, you make it available for everybody. It is now up to the imagination or, let's say, innovation capacity of the private players, how they want to use these systems to build larger services for citizens, for businesses, and take advantages of these.
Today, there's a whole ecosystem built on Aadhaar and UPI payments.
As an example, Tej told us it used to be difficult to open a bank account for people in remote and often poor areas in India. The banks either refused or took forever to check whether they felt they could trust the client.
But India's open ecosystem has accelerated things, and banks and businesses can now quickly see whether their clients are creditworthy.
Today, almost 80% of adult population has bank accounts. But if we had continued the bank account openings at the same rate as it was, let's say, 10 years ago, it would have taken us 48 years to reach the bank account penetration that we have today.
Government services have also improved, said Tej. While it used to take 2 months to get a passport, it now takes only 2 weeks. And because people can interact directly with authorities, he also says there's less corruption.
Tej compared India's rapid digital development to Europe's Industrial Revolution.
Starting in Britain in the 1760s and then spreading across Europe, the Industrial Revolution led to a lot of new factories, railways, power plants, and roads. The physical infrastructure was the foundation for development and wealth that grew in Europe over the coming centuries.
India never had that level of physical infrastructure, not on the scale of the Industrial Revolution. But the Digital Revolution has become their chance to leapfrog ahead.
And they've used that chance well, it seems. Much like China and its adoption of electric vehicles, as we found in episode 2 of Delayland. China missed its chance with conventional combustion engine cars, but adapted the new technology in electric vehicles and left Germany and its once pioneering car makers behind, literally stuck in the past. Check it out if you missed the episode.
In the meantime, here's Tej's advice for Germany.
I think there is an opportunity to create more digital infrastructure, which can then create an ecosystem like what happened in India to enable further growth in mature economies like Germany. If you don't grow, definitely, you know, you will see threats coming in from other economies and life is going to become harder.
Back home, Tej's words still ring in our ears. It does sometimes feel like the whole of Germany is stuck in the past.
Yeah, but remember, there are many people who do hope for change. People like Frank Reinartz at Düsseldorf's digital agency.
If you ask me for a wish to the nation, to the country, yeah, then I would say I wish that we try to see technology as a chance to improve our life, our country, yeah, and not so much as a risk for our jobs, for our way of living and things like that.
The federal government elected in 2025 seems to agree. It has installed Germany's first ever Minister for Digital Transformation.
But will he get things done? I mean, we're good in creating administrations, but then they often get inflated or bloated by mini divisions and departments. We're so good at setting goals and starting projects, but then we always struggle to get them done.
And we are seldom on budget, too. Delay, the PhD student, worries that Germany's love for complicating things with rules could ruin our path to a more digital future.
Germany is a successful country, right? It's not just an average country. It's a great country, and they made it from all these rules and the old ways of they did before. So maybe they really think that if we keep the same work, we will still be a good country. But if this is the thinking, then you miss the change there. If you think it worked 50 years ago, 20 years from now, it won't work.
Lots of people seem to feel the same way, and some people are leaving the country.
And yet, there are many who consider moving here and start a new life.
Why? That's what we try to find out in the next episode of Delayland, The Power of Optimism.
It took almost a year until I get an appointment for extending my visa and basically changing my visa from a student to a working visa.
Of course, we're in a competition, and if you let people wait for months or even a year, that's just frustrating, and that's not the message we should send in the world.
So, what do you think about Germany, and what should it learn from other countries?
Share your thoughts and write an email to delayland@dw.com. And thanks to all of you who have already sent us messages. We really appreciate your feedback.
Delayland, Germany and the Missing Magic is a DW production researched, written and produced by us.
Andreas Becker
and Nicolas Martin.
Our editor was Zulfika Abani.
Sound design by Warner Poland. Audio editing and mixing by Simon Berghahn.
Executive producer Judith Hartl.
Special thanks to Thomas Neufeld, Ashutosh Pandey, and the whole DW business team and the DW Hindi department.
People who contributed to this episode:
the Tamil Nadu office in Chennai, special thanks to our dear colleague Gunavati Manavalan, and to Stefan Alusa of the Indo-German Chamber of Commerce.
Cover art, Nora Charlotte Tom and Anke Jordan.
Marketing, Sam Baker and Sachin Sharma.
If you like this podcast, hit subscribe, leave us a comment on your favorite podcast platform, and tell your friends about it.
Thanks for listening, and come back next time.
When headlines get louder,
we go deeper.
Say hello to Berlin Briefing,
your guide to Germany's impact on the world.
Between East and West, autocrats and democrats, Germany's whole system is under stress.
Pressure from all sides.
And the world around Germany is getting more dangerous.
Is democracy glitching? Too much noise? Too little clarity?
We decode what it means for you.
From Berlin to right where you are.
It's all in Berlin Briefing on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts.